You may have seen the Arabia Foundation, or its founder, Ali Shahabi, in the media lately. Shahabi was on MSNBC's Morning Joe March 20th, running through what happened to be a number of talking points from de facto Saudi ruler Mohammed bin Salman. The big one is that the crown prince of U.S. ally Saudi Arabia is engaged in a massive corruption crackdown. Well, a recent New York Times investigation noted that the Saudi government won't specify any charges against individuals or say who's been found guilty or innocent, and, quote, extensive interviews with Saudi officials, members of the royal family, and relatives, advisors, and associates of the detainees revealed a murkier, coercive operation marked by cases of physical abuse, which transferred billions of dollars in private wealth to the crown prince's control, close quote. None of that came up on Morning Joe, which moved from bin Salman's corruption crackdown to how he's modernizing Saudi Arabia and taking on the religious establishment. Shahabi also had an op-ed in the Washington Post, scapegoating Saudi Arabia won't help us fight terrorism. And he was seen on BBC World News and CNN, touting bin Salman's change-making credentials while serving as an independent analyst of Saudi Arabia and U.S.-Saudi relations. It would be fair to wonder if the Arabia Foundation and Shahabi have ties to the Saudi government, but these appearances, including Morning Joe, where he talked about the country's need for a benevolent autocrat, wouldn't tell you. Fair analyst Adam Johnson made multiple requests to the foundation for its donors, but they wouldn't provide any other than founder Ali Shahabi himself, an investment banker. They say they're not backed by the Saudi government, but by private citizens. Now, the distinction between private citizens and the government in a hereditary monarchy is somewhat blurry, but Johnson found one connection worth noting. The registered agent and legal counsel of the Arabia Foundation, Eric Lewis, represented the Saudi government and related charities in the lawsuit brought by families of September 11th victims over the Saudi royal family's role in the September 11th attacks. The website of Lewis's law firm boasts that it has, quote, extensive experience representing and advising foreign sovereigns, including the governments of Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Egypt, close quote. Indeed, Washington Post columnist Ishan Tharoor has noted the foundation has close ties to the kingdom. It just doesn't stop the Washington Post opinion section from running multiple op-eds from folks on the foundation payroll that identify the group simply as a Washington-based think tank. CNN and the BBC didn't mention any relationship either. So when Shahabi says, as he did on Morning Joe, that the proof that bin Salman's bold, needed leadership is approved by the general public is that there's been, quote, no bloodshed, there's been no demonstration, no domestic strife, close quote. Well, viewers not only hear no one mention that when there were anti-government demonstrations in 2011, the Saudi military opened fire on protesters and snuffed out resistance with torture and extrajudicial killings, but no one asks whether Shahabi's group's ties to the Saudi regime affect its assessment that the crown prince is widely loved and popular. Pentagon grapples with a thorny question after Niger ambush, read the March 19th Washington Post headline, What Next in Africa? But, as Gunnar Olson wrote for FAIR.org, among the possible answers not considered by the Washington Post, close U.S. military bases? End U.S. drone strikes? Stop U.S. special forces raids? Post-National Security reporter Dan LaMoth reported that the four U.S. Green Berets killed in Niger last October, quote, did not have air support for an hour after calling for help, leaving it vulnerable as a larger force of about 50 militants attacked with rifles and machine guns, close quote. According to the Post, the ambush, quote, underscores the danger of dispersing small teams across a vast continent, where the Pentagon does not have the same level of support for its service members as it does in a country such as Iraq or Afghanistan, close quote, where U.S. forces, quote, have a more robust network of fire support, aerial surveillance, medical help, and quick reaction rescue units when a crisis erupts, close quote. Other reports, like one by NBC News, noted that U.S. service members deployed to Niger weren't eligible for the imminent danger pay available to their counterparts in Iraq and Afghanistan and other, what it called, dangerous environments. By juxtaposing the U.S. military presence in hot battlefields like Iraq and Afghanistan with its role in places like Niger, sometimes referred to as being outside of areas of active hostilities, Olson notes, media make the implied answer to the question, what next in Africa, seem to be something like expand U.S. military infrastructure to protect and support U.S. special forces who will inevitably engage in hostilities. Underscoring that in the Post story is a quote from former AFRICOM commander Carter Ham, who says, quote, sometimes the knee-jerk reaction when something bad happens of get them out of there, that's not a particularly good response, close quote. What exactly is wrong with that response? The Post doesn't ask. The upshot is that not only the U.S.'s benevolent aims on the African continent, but the strategic value of endless war are not questioned meaningfully. A research fellow from the Cato Institute gets the last word in the piece, and he questions the definition of the mission. Quote, is it building up indigenous forces? And is that the extent of it? If so, great. Or are we doing kill-capture missions? Because if we're doing kill-capture missions, the horror of war is that you'll always kill the wrong guy in some numbers, close quote. That the U.S. military should not be intervening in sovereign African nations to kill-capture, to change regimes, to extract resources, to arm forces, to fight other forces, well, that's not a perspective allowed admission into the conversation. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR.